This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. We've got an informed tipster, loads of exciting Premier League games to preview, and an enthralling FA Cup final to look at. Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon to guide you through proceedings once more. It's been a busy midweek, Mark. Once again, lots of football happening. Where should we start? Should we start with the title race?
Is there a race left, Jack? I suppose.
Oh, come on! I think there's still a bit of juice left in it just yet.
Yeah, I mean, Manchester City, obviously, you know, overcome sort of, I suppose, what looked on paper to be a tricky hurdle away to Wolves, did so in fine fashion. That 5-1 victory, of course, De Bruyne got the four goals, and I think the fact that they've opened up the 3-point advantage and now a 7 better goal difference. You know, it's a long way back for Liverpool now. We did say last week that I thought there was potential maybe for Liverpool to drop points against Tottenham, and they did. And Manchester City sort of ruthlessly exploited that. And, you know, they've got a lot of injuries at the moment defensively. But if you're scoring 5 goals a game, then doesn't really matter, I suppose.
Mark, you called that Spurs-Liverpool game perfectly. You said Son would score. You said that you expected Liverpool to drop points. That's exactly what happened. Liverpool did then bounce back with victory against Aston Villa on the Tuesday evening, but they were far from their best, were they?
No, you know, it was it's probably more awkward than they were anticipating, really. Didn't start the game well at all. And I think that's been... well, certainly in terms of like goals, I know they then pulled one back pretty quickly, but they have been a bit of a second half team in recent weeks. And, you know, they're not doing that much wrong. I suppose it's one of the consequences of going for a quadruple, and they will have played in absolutely every match they possibly could have this season by the time the season ends. It's just, you know, maybe not running on empty, but I think there is a little bit of fatigue setting in. And I think it's only right to be expected, really, because they do play, you know, right on the limits every single week. It's the, you know, it's how Klopp has managed to get the best out of Liverpool in the last few years. They're not a team that kind of takes it easy at any stage, and maybe they're just starting to feel the pinch a little bit, really, in terms of not being able to deliver 90-minute performances at the moment. But they did get the win, and they're still on 86 points, which is a fantastic achievement. If they win their last two games, which I expect them to, you know, against Southampton and then against Wolves, they're going to finish on 92 points. I mean, you know, that should be enough to win you Premier League titles. It's just that, you know, Man City are just so good. And, you know, I could see them maybe slipping up somewhere, maybe at West Ham. Maybe it's not absolutely, you know, a cakewalk for them against West Ham, but they've got that extra buffer now. Do you remember a few weeks ago we spoke about the goal difference and how I thought that Pep Guardiola, he's not going to say it in public, but it doesn't surprise me that they've really pushed these last few weeks. I think they've seen that opportunity, you know, to almost get an extra point in the bank, and that's how it's kind of looking now. I mean, whether Liverpool can claw it back against Southampton and give them a right going over, you know, we've seen Southampton lose 9-0 before. So, you know, maybe Liverpool can get it back there. But at the moment, the 7 goal difference and 3 points, it's just too much, I think, really, to see City blowing it from here.
It's interesting you mentioned Liverpool's points total. I saw a stat earlier that said that Manchester United have won the Premier League 7 times on less points than what Liverpool will finish on this season. It's a remarkable standard at the top of the league. Have you been impressed with the way that Manchester City have responded to their Champions League exit?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the excuses were there for them, weren't they, really, I suppose, in terms of just a bit demoralised. I mentioned earlier, got a few injuries at the back. You know, maybe didn't in the first few minutes against Newcastle, weren't right at it. But I think ultimately they would have been really lifted by, you know, Liverpool dropping points against Tottenham. Just eased the pressure slightly. And, you know, they were so slick, you know, against Newcastle at times. And then again, against Wolves, where, you know, De Bruyne got the 4 goals and was obviously magnificent, but it's not just him. You know, Foden seems to have stepped it up as well, I think, in the last few weeks. And, you know, in Pep Guardiola's reign at City, they have been relentless when they've got in front. You know, they are remarkable the way that they just sort of keep on churning out these victories towards the end of the season. I suppose at all times, really. I mean, you know, they're just sort of consistently getting, like, you know, not far short of 100 points, and it makes it quite difficult to beat them, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Let's go from the top to the bottom of the Premier League table, where Leeds find themselves in huge trouble. But it feels like there was a missed opportunity for Everton in the week. They couldn't find a goal against the already relegated Watford. Where is your mind at with the relegation scrap at the moment, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, really tight. I mean, Leeds obviously keep shooting themselves in the foot, getting, you know, first half red cards for Ayling and, you know, Dan James were awful, both awful tackles.
Really bad,
I suppose.
Yeah,
I still feel like, you know, there might not be that many points left for any of the three teams, which makes it really interesting. I mean, at one stage, you were talking about 40 points, you know. I just think that that's, you know, we just overestimate how many points teams will get, you know, in a season. I'm actually now looking, starting to just look at Burnley and just, I don't know, I don't massively fancy them to get too much from their remaining three games, you know. So it's just a case, really, of whether Leeds can get maybe one more win. I mean, it might only be like two draws, but I'm sort of sitting on the fence here. I find it quite difficult. I think from a betting point of view, I'd maybe be sort of just having a look at Burnley at the moment, but it's showing like a little bit of faith in Leeds that's kind of, you know, I don't think we've seen too much, have we, in terms of evidence of that. Just in terms of the fixtures that they've got left, though, not too bad for Leeds, you know. Brighton at home is obviously next for them. And then on the final day, they're at Brentford. Just from a kind of percentage point of view, and I'm not saying I necessarily fancy them to get too many points, but, you know, that's not bad, is it, really, for your last two games? And then, you know, I think from Burnley's sort of perspective, next couple are both away. Away at Villa, that they've got, haven't they? And also away at Spurs. Haven't got them in for too many points there. And then it's just about that Newcastle game on the final day. And I think that, generally speaking, Newcastle are, you know, heading in the right direction. So, it might only take one or two points. I know that people sort of talk about, you know, needing wins and stuff like that. It might not need that. And that's why I'm not sort of giving up on sort of the fact, you know, from a Leeds point of view, that it's all doom and gloom. From Everton's perspective, it was a missed opportunity, because I think had they won that game, that really, you know, would have got them sort of safe, you know, if you're judging by what I was saying just a bit earlier there. You know, I think had they won and got to, you know, 38 points, I don't think Burnley or Leeds will get to 38. So that's the missed opportunity. They've got a couple of nice home games coming up, haven't they? Brentford and Crystal Palace. Again, I think a couple of draws probably does it for Everton. So I'd say it's between Burnley and Leeds. And it's maybe not, I know most people seem to be very down on Leeds at the moment, but I'm not sure that's the case, actually.
Is that because, Mark, you've seen that manager Jesse Marsh is wanting to use quotes from Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and Muhammad Ali in his attempt to avoid relegation?
The Gandhi reference brings back one of my favourite bits of Only Fools and Horses, when Rodney and Trigger are talking about sort of one-hit wonders, and Trigger brings up Gandhi. So they have one good film you never heard from him again, which is a absolutely superb line. I'm always wary of going two-footed on kind of the American managers, because I think they get a bit of a rough ride, particularly from the British press. You know, some of their kind of soccerisms, for want of a better word, kind of make them an easy target. Do you remember when Bob Bradley came over and he was absolutely slaughtered? And I am wary of kind of going sort of too harsh on Jesse Marsh for that. The simple fact is, and I said it at the time, I don't think they should have sacked Marcelo Bielsa. I think they've appointed a worse manager than Marcelo Bielsa. I think the reason that they were losing games when they did, under Bielsa is because they were having a terrible time with both injuries and also the schedule. And I think they sort of erroneously panicked. They need to keep 11 players on the pitch. But like I say, it might only take one or two draws and that they can still stay up. I don't think there's many points to be had for any of them teams that are fighting relegation.
Who do you think will survive? Let us know by tweeting us at Racing Post Sport. We put out a poll on Twitter regarding the big news that Erling Haaland will be linking up with Manchester City next season in the Premier League. And of course, all the talk has been about him. We wanted to know how many Premier League goals you think he'll score next season. And the results look something like this. 0-15 goals, got 16% of the vote. 16-20, the most popular, 33% of the vote. 26% and 25% of the vote going for 21-24 and 25 or more. Mark, I voted for 16-20. That was the most popular part of this week's poll. Confidence in Erling Haaland that he will hit the ground running from our followers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that he will. I mean, you know, he looks tailor made for the Premier League. You know, if you play for Manchester City, it's difficult, I suppose, to not score goals with the amount of chances they create. I'm always wary, or certainly have become more wary of this kind of, you know, the final piece in the jigsaw, because. Mm. You know, Lukaku was supposed to be that at Chelsea. Fernando Torres was supposed to have been that at Chelsea. Karim Benzema was supposed to be that for France. And yeah, I think, yes, he can sort of be a success. And I don't want to sort of go on a real hot take here and say he's going to flop. I'm not sure that he makes Manchester City that much better. Because
really?
Yeah, because I think one of City's great strengths is the way that they dominate possession and monopolize the ball. And they do that by having an extra midfielder up front. And, you know, that, you know, for most of Pep Guardiola's reign, you know, it always felt like an uneasy relationship, I felt, with Sergio Aguero. And he couldn't actually wait to get another midfielder into the team. And he quite often sort of drop him, and you know, I think the City fans loved him more, Aguero, more maybe than what Pep Guardiola did. And those tears when he left felt a bit sort of crocodile tears to me when he was on the pitch. I just think, you know, football, it's not an individual sport, and so you sometimes bring an individual in, but it doesn't necessarily make the team, you know, that much better. I mean, if I was looking, you know, they're the highest scorers in Europe already, Manchester City, so. They didn't lose their Champions League semi-final through a lack of goals, is it? I mean, they got four in the first leg and then were winning 1-0 in the second. They had five goals. I think that when they've had issues in the Champions League, it's been because they've conceded too many goals. You know, there was 3 to Tottenham when they went out and away goals. They conceded 3 to Liverpool at Anfield in the first half. Obviously, Real Madrid, you know, despite not having that much of the ball, managed to score, you know, 3 goals in each of the two legs against them. Lyon found it quite easy to score against them. So I like Erling Haaland, and I really like Manchester City. I just think that you know, whenever I've seen Pep Guardiola teams at their best, it's not necessarily always been with, you know, that kind of focal point to the attack. I'm thinking like when David Villa, Samuel Eto'o, Thierry Henry, they all had to play wide to get into the team. I don't think he massively loved Sergio Aguero. Even at Bayern Munich, there was a bit more of kind of a holistic approach to attacking. So I think it's going to be up to Haaland to adapt to what Manchester City want rather than the other way round. And I'm sure he'll get his goals. I just don't know if, you know, them signing Erling Haaland doesn't make me fancy them any more for next season's Champions League. Let's put it that way.
Mm. What does feel nice about it, though, Mark, is the fact it feels like the first in a long time where we've seen a player really hitting their prime and deciding to come to a Premier League club. That hasn't happened very often in the past few years, has it?
No, I mean, he's sort of, you know, like, seen as the next superstar of Mbappe. I don't think he's as good as that. I have to say, I think Mbappe's kind of different level to Erling Haaland, and sort of his generation, I suppose, you know. So, but he is, he's definitely, you know, there's a lot of hype around him. I think he is, you know, obviously a big name player that should get better as well. You know, there should be improvement in him. I'm just going to leave this one out there maybe for last. You know, Borussia Dortmund have signed him. Erling Haaland has scored, you know, a lot of goals for them. Do you think Borussia Dortmund have got any better in the last couple of years? I don't know. Yeah. And that can be the problem. You know, this is not cricket. This is not, you know, which is like, you know, there's individual battles, isn't there, in cricket? You know, it's a team sport, but ultimately, you know, a bowler bowls and then the batter hits it. In football, you sign a striker and you think, oh, well, he'll score goals, but it changes the way that you play. And then you might not create as many chances because the reason you created the chances was because you played in a certain manner. And, you know, so it'd be really interesting to see if it does work out like most people are expecting. He's going to get sort of, you know, 30, 40 goals next season. But always worth remembering this stat, which I think is one of the strongest ones out there from a betting point of view. No foreign player has ever won the Premier League Golden Boot in their first season in English football.
Remarkable, that, isn't it? Remarkable. Yeah, can't wait to see how that one pans out. Yeah. Mark, are you feeling slightly nervous today?
Yeah. Spurs v Arsenal. Always feel slightly on edge for these occasions. The day's going a little bit too fast. I don't really want the night to happen, really. I mean, it'd be pretty bad from a Tottenham point of view if Arsenal seal Champions League qualification at White Hart Lane, even a draw.
Are you going?
I'm not going, and it's not because it was... if you remember when the game was supposed to be, there was a reason why I couldn't go, and then Arsenal cried off, if you remember.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, there was a reason why I couldn't go then, and then it's just been impossible to get a ticket. So, no, I'll watch it at home. I mean, somebody asked me yesterday where I was watching it. I said, from behind the sofa. It's that kind of occasion. I mean, I think Spurs are about 11-8, aren't they, to win the game. Sort of 5-4-ish. I think that's about right. You know, it's not a big betting heat for me. What I do think, though, is if Tottenham win, I think that Arsenal might not beat Newcastle, and Tottenham can then sort of grab top four. But whoever gets it, you know, I think that both teams are, you know, had very good second halves of the season and are clearly both on the up at the moment.
Absolutely. Another midweek game to look forward to. Right, time to preview the big one, the FA Cup final. It's, of course, Liverpool against Chelsea, 21-20. Liverpool, 11-4. Chelsea, 13-5. The draw, this one, 4:45 on Saturday. Mark, really looking forward to this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the League Cup final between the teams finished 0-0, but it was a really good game. I mean, you know, it was an excellent...
Brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah,
it was. You know, there were a lot of chances for both teams. And then obviously Liverpool won 11-10 on penalties. So I do think it will be, you know, a good game. Tuchel against Klopp. I don't think they're like amazingly good friends, but they've kind of followed similar paths, really. You know, both manage Mainz, both manage Borussia Dortmund, now both in the Premier League. Sort of formations are different, but I think their ethos and style of play pretty similar. So, I think it'll be a really, you know, a good game. And, you know, it's really funny because Liverpool, talking about the quad and, you know, is this the best Liverpool team ever? I've seen a lot of discussions on that. And if they end up only winning the Carabao Cup, it's going to feel like a really disappointing season for them, isn't it? So I think in that respect, it's a big game for them. You know, get that second trophy, then they can go into at least the Champions League final really in high spirits. And for Chelsea, I've been massively disappointed with them this season. You know, they were supposed to be the challengers to Manchester City. Not many Chelsea managers survive a really, you know, bad season by their standards. And this would be, if they don't win the FA Cup, I think, you know, a bad season by, you know, Chelsea's expectations.
It's felt as if in recent weeks, Chelsea have been passing time somewhat. I know there's been confusion off the pitch and the uncertainty that comes with that. Does it almost feel like they've just been waiting for this moment? This is the game where we're going to see the real Chelsea.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, they've definitely been coasting. I mean, you know, some of their results, the four they conceded to Brentford and then against Arsenal, that wasn't the Chelsea that I think Thomas Tuchel has sort of built over the last, was it year and a half or sort of, you know, season and a half. Did you know they are a good team? I think we've seen that in kind of, you know, the bigger. I mean, against Liverpool, all three games this season have been draws, haven't they? And they got away to Real Madrid. Do you remember that? Where they, I mean, they really played well in that game when there was a lot riding on. They were so unlucky, I felt, to, you know, to suffer elimination against Real Madrid. And it feels like they're kind of turning it on, you know, for when they kind of almost need to. I don't massively like that in teams because I think it's not the easiest thing in the world to do that. But you could argue, I don't know if this is the case, but you could argue that they're, you know, a bit fresher, really. They haven't been playing with any intensity, really. And every single game that Liverpool go into, you know, over these last couple of months have been big ones, haven't they? They've just had to win in the Premier League and, you know, the cup tie after cup tie, whether it be FA Cup, you know, even in the FA Cup, Chelsea had Crystal Palace and Liverpool had Man City, you know. So there's definitely been, I think, some coasting going on from Chelsea. And, you know, you could argue that they'll be the fresher of the two teams and that could play a part at Wembley on Saturday.
What front three do you think Klopp will opt with for Liverpool? I mean, Salah's been relentlessly brilliant this season. I guess in the last couple of games, he's maybe not met the high standards he's set himself and we've all become used to. Are you expecting him to start?
Yeah, I think the fact that he was rested at Villa Park suggests he'll start. And then through the middle, Mane feels almost undroppable for a game of this size. And, you know, Diaz has been so good. I would say him on the left. I think that, you know, Liverpool will play what I would consider, and I think most people would consider, to be their best front three. I don't think they can, you know, be bothered about this game against Southampton that they've got coming up. Champions League's a bit of a way off. You know, this, not only because it's the next one, but because it's probably more important now than the Premier League. You know, this is the biggest game in sort of the next sort of couple of weeks for Liverpool until the Champions League final.
I feel like I'm sensing from your voice where you're going with your best bet for this, but let's get it out. Come on.
I'm going to go for Chelsea or draw, double chance. I mean, look, Liverpool, 7 wins in 8, unbeaten since March, not really lost a big game this year because the one they did lose to Inter, they'd already, you know, they were far enough ahead that actually, you know, still managed to tie quite nicely. But I do think Chelsea have been coasting in these last few weeks. And I can just sense that if Chelsea are at their best and, you know, as stubborn defensively as they can be, that makes them, you know, really sort of difficult and awkward opponents. And Liverpool haven't managed to beat them in 90 minutes so far this season. A lot of firms actually make Liverpool odds on to win the game. And I don't know. I think it could be quite close in the final. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if Chelsea were able to at least hang on until extra time.
Pleasant listening for Chelsea fans. Let's preview the rest of the Premier League games. Tottenham Burnley, midday, Sunday. This should be fun for you, Mark, I think, maybe.
Well, I mean, it's going to be massively impacted, I think, by what happens against Arsenal on Thursday. But yeah, as we're looking at the game now, I was thinking Spurs and under 3.5 goals is the best way to approach it. Burnley have been more attacking under Mike Jackson, but I'm looking at the league table now. I'm thinking, you know, every point could be absolutely huge. And so I expect them to sit in, make it awkward for Spurs. And we know that's not really Tottenham's forte, opening up those kind of packed defences. So might have to be a bit of a grind for Conte's men.
We spoke with Kevin Pullain a few weeks ago about teams on the beach, and this next fixture feels like it has the possibility to throw up some curveballs. Villa against Crystal Palace, 11th versus 12th. They're both safe. They're not going up and down. What are we expecting here?
Yeah, I was looking at the draw. You'd have a look at Villa's last 8. Their 2 wins have been against Norwich and Burnley. Crystal Palace, awkward team to beat. They've only conceded 8 goals in their last 13 Premier League game. So yeah, I agree with you. Our motivation, difficult one to pick out here, so I just thought it might be a share of the spoils.
Leeds desperately need points. They're at home to Brighton this weekend, Mark.
Yeah, so this is sort of a little bit confusing because, you know, I was sort of talking earlier on there about how Leeds maybe in terms of relegation are in not as bad a spot as maybe what people think. And one of those reasons is because they're actually, according to the odds, favourites against Brighton. So if you're just working it out on sort of their you know, probability of picking up points in this game pretty high against Albion. But I mean, I think I've just got to go for Brighton draw, no bet. Obviously, there's no Ayling, no Dan James. They've had other injuries as well to key players. And, you know, should they really be outsiders at Leeds? I'm just hoping really Graham Potter wants to, you know, finish in the top 10. And he's got that as a bit of a kind of motivation, a bit of a carrot for his team. But their only defeat in the last seven came at Man City. In that time, they've won at Arsenal, Spurs and Wolves. They beat Man United 4-0. So, I mean, you know, you're betting on motivation to a large extent. But, you know, Brighton probably shouldn't be outsiders, should they, for this game?
Next up, Watford against Leicester.
Yeah, Leicester to win. Leicester, bigger odds here to win than what Everton were in midweek. Everton were odds on to win that game. Didn't do that much. But Watford, that team they picked out, more like a Carling Cup. Well, you know, rolling back the years there, was it Carabao Cup? Wasn't it? More like a Carabao Cup team. I mean, they had no shots on target against Everton. Leicester haven't got much to play for, but if they've got anything about them, they should be able to win this game. And Jamie Vardy's sort of wife being in the news at the moment doesn't seem to have impacted on him at all, does it, judging by his couple of goals against your boys in midweek?
Yeah, I mean, that's not difficult, Mark, if that's the expectation. That's have you been following the Wagatha Christie trials?
Yeah, very closely. Yeah, I suppose my only comment so far is I feel sorry for Peter Andre.
I haven't said that on Twitter.
I haven't said that before. I don't.
That's three beat. Let's discuss West Ham against Manchester City next.
Yeah, obviously, you know, a huge game for Manchester City. They'll feel like if they win this, you know, title. Basically in the bag. I'm going to go for Man City to win and both teams to score. You know, they were already sort of struggling for centre-backs, weren't they, with Fernandinho and Laporte in the back line against Wolves in midweek. And then Laporte looked like he picked up a knock as well. So I think West Ham will sense an opportunity to score, you know, maybe in this game like Wolves did. But, you know, ultimately City in the groove and should be too good. Just if you're looking for maybe an anytime goal scorer in this one, Mark Noble's, you know, last home game, isn't it, as a West Ham player. I'm sure he'll play some part. They'll definitely stick him on pens if he's on the pitch. And he might even be having a few shots from distance as well. But they've got to get the ball first. That's the problem.
But as you said earlier, Mark, this feels like the last potential banana skin for Manchester City, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Aston Villa on the final day at home. You know, maybe Villa will need Gerrard to put his boots on and play, you know, to sort of inspire them. But yeah, I mean, they're much more likely to slip up on the road than they are at home.
I've really enjoyed doing these Bets Clubs episodes throughout the season, but I must say I am looking forward to the end of the season because I keep, whenever I say, oh, whoever Norwich are against, what's your prediction, Mark? I know what the outcome is going to be. So for the few final times, Wolves against Norwich, what are we expecting?
Is this the 37th time? No. So actually, I'm going for Norwich at 7-1.
Are you?
I mean, they are. You know, look, Norwich are terrible. I think we all, you know, it's pretty obvious that it's been a, you know, shocking season, albeit, you know, the financial constraints and stuff like that. They still should have been, I think, more competitive than they have been. But Wolves just look so dispirited at the moment. They're 17th on expected goal difference, Wolves, which I don't think many people would have expected. I'm looking at them. Yeah, they've been a bit better at beating bad teams this year. You remember under Nuno, they always seem to have trouble. But, you know, 1 point against Burnley, 1 point against Leeds this season. So that's in sort of out of a possible six. They drew 0-0 at Carrow Road. They were beaten by Norwich in the FA Cup. At Molineux, if you can remember as well, a couple of months ago. So, look, I mean, it feels like an absolute kind of, you know, end of season nothingness type of game. And therefore, I don't really want to be taking short prices about Wolves. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit there for Norwich about not wanting to finish bottom. I don't know. But at 7-1, I think I'd rather take them in what is basically going to feel like a friendly, I think.
Okay, well, makes sense. Dean Smith certainly is very keen to leapfrog Watford into 19th. Yeah. So if that's all we've got left to play for, then onwards we go. Everton against Brentford. This one, the 4:30 kickoff on Sunday.
Yeah, it was swapped, wasn't it? It was meant to have been West Ham versus Man City. West Ham asked for an extra 2.5 hours to prepare for a possible Europa League final that they're not appearing in. So, I mean, I really don't know.
There's a certain smugness in that.
No,
in
I just don't know how 2.5 hours can make that much difference to...
Marginal gains.
Yeah, I mean, come on. So, it's a big game, it's 4:31. Obviously, for Everton. I was looking at under 2.5 goals. I mean, Everton have basically... are trying to just defend their way out of trouble. Lampard was speaking about the nerves at Watford. I think there is a different expectation when you're, when all of a sudden the onus is on you to win. They've been playing quite well as underdogs. I'm not sure now that they can sort of just flick that switch and suddenly start playing like favourites. But, there's only been 9 goals in their last 6 matches. I've absolutely no idea on Brentford's attitude towards this game. I mean, you could argue, they'll be free and they'll play night. It'll help them. Maybe it won't. I'm just looking at Everton and just thinking, they're just going to look to grind it out.
One Monday game, 8 o'clock, Newcastle, Arsenal. Could be a big player in the top four race, this.
Yeah, I mean, this could be an absolutely massive game, or it could be, complete non-entity. And so at the moment, though, I mean, Arsenal are odds on. And I think it's a hard game for them at St James's Park. I'm going to go for Newcastle or draw a double chance. Since the start of November, only Man City and Liverpool have won in the Premier League at St James's. So, if Arsenal need something from the trip to Tyneside and they might need to win, it's definitely not an easy game for them. And, I think it's harder than the prices suggest, that's for sure.
We've got the playoffs to look forward to in the EFL. Let's get the thought of Dan Childs now.
And now we're welcomed by Dan Childs from the Racing Post, who's going to go through everything EFL. Childs, we'll start with the Championship playoffs, always one of the favourite moments of the season when we get to see who goes up to the Premier League, usually nerve shredders. Who'd you fancy in terms of the Championship playoffs?
Yeah, I've got quite a strong fancy for Nottingham Forest here. I mean, I know it's often called like the playoff lottery, but I do feel that the best team normally wins them. And I think Forest, this time are the best team. I think the semi-finals have ended up quite lopsided, really. You got the two big clubs, Nottingham Forest and Sheffield United, going head-to-head, and Luton and Huddersfield, who have performed a miracle, really, to get into the top six. I mean, just because you're not as big a club doesn't mean you can't put a good team out on the pitch. But I do actually feel that the bigger clubs in this case are the stronger teams as well. And I'd fancy the winner of that Forest Sheffield United final game to go on and go up. But
So why Forest? Why Forest over Sheffield then, Dan?
I think Forest's squad is stronger overall. I mean, you think that they've had injuries to Lewis Scrabble and Keenan Davis, two of the centre forwards, and then Sam Surridge steps up and he's been absolutely outstanding during the run-in. You go right through their team, got a lovely balance in midfield with Yates and Garner and Zinchenko providing the creativity and the guy with a back three is really strong. Worrell, Cook and McKenna and Spence is probably the best right wing back outside the Premier League. So I just think they're strong all over. Sheffield United, they've got injuries up front as well with McGoldrick, McBurney and Brewster out. And Billy Sharp's really struggling as well. And I just don't think they've got the depth to cope with that. They've been playing with Illiman and Diye and Morgan Gibbs-White further forward. I know they got that 4-0 eye-catching result against Fulham, but it sounded like Fulham were just shirking and not really getting involved in the physical exchanges in that game. And I don't feel that Sheffield United are going to find it anywhere near as easy to expose that Forest defence.
Okay, yeah, I mean, in terms of the other one, I mean, I'll just go, I mean, Luton have had quite a lot of injuries, done well to even really finish in the top six with their budget. And, Huddersfield continue to punch above their weight as well. But, agree, whoever wins that semi probably goes on.
I would fancy Huddersfield in that semi, just touching on that. As you mentioned, the Luton injuries. I mean, they had 7 out for that 1-0 win at home to Reading in their final game. And their 3 players, Campbell, Cornick and Jerome, were substituted and looked like they were struggling, when they were subbed in that game. So it's far from ideal to go in the playoffs with sort of 7, potentially to 10 players struggling. And Huddersfield they've done really well, haven't they? 6 wins in the last 7 and approaching it with plenty of confidence.
And Dan, on the last week's show, you did say that, you know, don't rule out Bristol Rovers being able to claw back that goal difference deficit against Northampton, and would have been absolutely heartbreaking for the Cobblers supporters. It's going to be difficult maybe for Northampton to lift themselves now for the playoffs. I mean, who do you fancy to win the League Two playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned, I think, didn't I, that I like Bristol Rovers and Mansfield, and I was thinking of choosing between them if they were, you know, going to end up in the playoffs. So now that Bristol Rovers have gone up, I've got to stick with Mansfield, really, to finish the job. I mean, you look at where they've come from. I mean, after 14 games, they were second bottom in the division, had a lot of injury problems at the time. And since then, they've put on 66 points in 32 games, which is like averaging over 2 points a game, which is like title winning form, really, in League Two. I think what's been the key, a lot of those injuries are cleared up, and also beef the squad up with a lot of, you know, some quality signings in January. Matty Longstaff came in from Newcastle on loan, Jamie Murphy on loan from Hibernian, Lucas Akins, we brought in from Burton. I think he managed in Nigel Clough at Burton. So they've added a lot of quality there in January. And I just fancy them, you know, to win their semi-final against Northampton. You know, firstly, I think Northampton, as you mentioned, that remarkable end to the season's got to be hard for them to take mentally, to go and win your last game 3-1, going into that game with a goal difference advantage of 5 and still miss out. That's got to be tough to take. They are the lowest scorers as well among the playoff teams, Northampton. And I think that, you know, that psychologically, and you're going to a Mansfield team that won 13 of their last 15 home games. If they do lose that first leg, how do they come back? In the other semi, you know, Port Vale against Swindon, I probably fancy Port Vale maybe to come through that. They have got that big double boost last weekend where Darryl Clark came back to lead from the front as manager after he had a spell of compassionate leave, and they got that massive 1-0 win at Exeter to confirm their playoff place. They are still missing Tom Conlon, who's probably their best midfield player, but I'd fancy them to get past Swindon, who I think they relied maybe a bit too much on Harry McCurdy's goals. Their defence is the worst among the teams in the playoffs. I think it's a worry, given these games are so tight. There's only 3 points between the four teams in the League Two playoffs. All the games are going to be tight. It's not ideal having a suspect defence could let you down at a key moment.
And then finally, Dan, can't let you go without talking about Watford. You'll be back in the EFL next season. You are a Hornets season ticket holder. What do you make of Rob Edwards' probable appointment as manager of Watford? Of course, did really well with the spring.
I mean, he's been appointed, isn't he, for the start of next season. Yeah. I'm really pleased with the appointment. I mean, the negative reaction would be, oh, he's been managing in League Two, it's a massive step up. Now, that is all true, but I do feel that if you're a good manager, you're a good manager. And I think he's an excellent manager in the making. I look at what he did at Forest Green, where they missed out on the playoffs last season, having finished really poorly. He took over a team. Then they've lost Aaron Collins, who was a big part of their attack to Bristol Rovers in the summer. And he's still massively improved them. Got to tune out on Matt Stevens, who's finished with their top score with 23 goals. I mean, you've got to remember the previous season, he was being loaned out to Stevenage. I mean, that's what good management's about. You know, he's identified the right system, got Chris Cadden and Kane Wilson as the two wing-backs. They've been the best wing-backs in League Two, providing a lot of that quality service for Stevens and Matt. And I just think that, given that how well he's managed there at Forest Green, that will apply, you know, even at a higher level. The squad he's taken over at Watford, there will be some talented players in there, even though the likes of probably Dennis and Saar are going to go. João Pedro, you'd imagine, will stay. There'll be some, you know, Imran Luz is a good midfield player that could be excellent in the Championship. There's a lot of good centre-backs there for Championship level. Sierra Outer, who was excellent in the Championship last year, has hardly got a look in the Premier League. So there's material there to work with. The if, I would say, with Watford is you've got to give him time. He's been given a 2-year contract. You've got to give him time to settle in, and also the ability to influence the recruitment. He's been excellent influencing the recruitment of players at Forest Green. Watford need to give him a little bit more leeway than maybe they have done with previous managers.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of people saying sacked in November. But thanks very much.
That'd be the knee jerk. But for me, you know, if they give him a bit of time, you know, I think he could be the right man.
Love this time of the season in the EFL. Great to have Dan Childs on, as always. Mark, let's move onwards to your best bets for this week. Once again, firing in some winners last week. Let's get your prop shop
Yeah, so in the League Two playoff, Mansfield against Northampton, Matty Longstaff, obviously Newcastle loan, he got 6 in 16 games, probably a step above League Two. And 12-1 feels like a decent each-way price, albeit that you don't tend to get, you know, huge amount of first-leg goals in sort of the EFL playoffs. Of course, Roberts, the Northampton keeper, suspended, one of the best in the league. So, you know, problems maybe for the Cobblers there as well after he was sent off, wasn't he, against Barrow in that dramatic ending to the season for them, as Dan Charles has already sort of alluded to. So, yeah, Matty Longstaff of Mansfield.
Absolutely brilliant. Let's get your long shot.
I'm going to go for Montpellier at 13-2 to beat Paris Saint-Germain. PSG, they're an absolute disgrace, that mob. I mean, they haven't won in their last three against Strasbourg, Troyes, and I suppose maybe less of a disgrace against Lens. But, I mean, the players have been away this week. I saw Mbappe was in Madrid. Neymar was posting pictures from Barcelona. I don't know if Messi went to Saudi Arabia, but he was posting pictures about Saudi Arabia or something. But I mean, there's just no desire for them to sort of do anything now this season. So look, I mean, Montpellier aren't very good, but at 13-2, they might give you a run for your money. I think at least they'll be trying. You can't say that about Paris.
Let's get a treble.
Yeah, so I found this one quite difficult this week. I'm going to go for a couple of games in the Bundesliga. So Mainz to beat Eintracht Frankfurt. I mean, surely Frankfurt have got two eyes on the Europa League final on Wednesday. Mainz beat Bayern recently and they had 7 shots on target, so Bayern's won. I mean, I wouldn't say the two teams hate each other. It's a local enough derby, I think, for Mainz to be interested. Let's put it that way, though. So I'll go for Mainz. Union Berlin to beat Bochum. I mean, Union are having a fantastic season. They're guaranteed European football next season. If they win, still might be Champions League. I think that's a bit of a push for them, but it's the last day. You know, they've got to win to stand a chance of the Champions League. But one of the other reasons I think they need to win is they don't want to drop ideally into the Conference League. And if they finish 7th, they'll be in the Conference League. So they're 6th at the moment. Could finish 4th, you know, with a win, and if other results go their way, could finish 7th if they lose and, you know, other results go against them. So they don't want to be in Conference League. If they win, they're at least guaranteed Europa League, and I think that will be enough of a carrot for them. And then finally, Leicester to beat Watford, which we've already
superb. Brilliant. And Mark, it's been a phenomenal run of nap tipping recently. Another winner last week. Let's continue that fine form.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm going to just stick with something we've already spoke about a couple of times, but it's Leicester to beat Watford. It's not been easy for Brendan Rodgers, his team, really. You know, having the European run, playing every midweek can be tough, and they've had injuries and stuff like that. I still expected them to do better. But since March, they've beaten a number of what you call the kind of lesser lights, I suppose, Burnley and Leeds, you know, Brentford, maybe when things weren't going great for them. They beat Crystal Palace, they've beaten Norwich. So when they've kind of been dropped in level, I think they've won enough games to suggest that they're good enough to beat Watford. And I just look at sort of, you know, Watford, and they're just, they're playing out. See, they're playing out time. Most of the good players have said they don't want to play for the club anymore. It certainly it looked that way, given that none of them played, or very few of them played, against Everton. Leicester's only real bad result recently, I think, in terms of, you know, in when we're looking at their season, in terms of what they were trying to do, was that 2-1 defeat against Everton. They did have 9 shots on target in that game. So it wasn't like I think they deserved to lose. So, you know, with the right attitude, I'm expecting the right attitude, they should win at Vicarage Road.
There we go. There's Mark's best bets for this week. As we mentioned on last week's episode, we had lots of questions regarding the Asian handicap market. We'll get onto that and also preview the Europa League coming up. Really excited to get Mark's thoughts on Asian handicap betting. He's tipped up a lot of selections in this kind of market in recent weeks. So let's get some clarity around what he's thinking. Mark, we'll start with Rob James. Simple question that you can answer. Can you explain how Asian handicap works?
Right, okay. So I think that the first three bits of it are really quite simple. So if something is plus zero, that would say, you would say off scratch for that. And that effectively is draw no bet. So, you know, if the game finishes in a draw, you get your money back. If the team you've bet on wins, then you win. And if they lose, then you lose. For the half a goal handicap, which is often sort of referred to as 0.5, that basically depends. So if you're on minus 0.5, you just need the team to win for your bet to be a winner. If you're on plus 0.5, that's the complete flip of that. Ultimately, it's like double chance. You're just betting on the team to not lose the game. You're getting a half goal start. So if it finishes 0-0, in terms of the Asian handicap, you know, you win because you had that half a goal start. When it gets to a one goal handicap, so if you bet a team that's, say, 1-2 favourites, they'll often be sort of minus one goal on the Asian handicap. If they win by one goal, you get your money back. If they win by two or more, then you win. And if they lose, then you obviously lose. And then on the flip side of that, you know, apologies, I suppose, for those that really understand Asian handicap, and I'm speaking in quite simple terms. But, you know, if you back a team, you know, an outsider plus a one goal start, if they were to lose by a goal, then you get your money back. If they lose by two or more, you lose. And then, you know, if they don't lose, then your bet's a winner. Anyway, I suppose it gets a little bit more confusing for people when we talk about sort of 0.25 and 0.75. And I think the best way to kind of go into that, and it's often referred to as quarter goal and three quarter goal. So the best way to go into that is you're almost splitting. Well, you are. You're splitting the bet in two, really. So imagine you have a £10 bet at evens and it's on a 0.25. Half of your bet is on the zero, which I've already explained how that works. And the other half of that bet is on the 0.5 outcome of that. So if we sort of talk about sort of backing Arsenal at 0.25 for this game against Tottenham this evening, and you're having 10, let's say the odds are even money, and they're usually, you know, around about the 1.8 to, so, you know, what sort of 4-5 to about sort of, I don't know, 11-10, or, you know, tries to get as close to even money as possible, really. That's the whole point of, you know, the handicap system. So let's say Arsenal are 0.25 underdogs for the game, and you have £10 at evens on Arsenal plus 0.25 start. You're effectively having £5 on Arsenal plus zero and £5 on Arsenal plus 0.5. If that makes sense. Does that make sense to you,
Jack? Yeah, no, I've got you.
And then for 0.75, it's basically the same. You're having half of your bet on 0.5 and the other half at one. And, you know, and it works in the same way that I just explained. And then that goes all the way up, you know, 1.25, 1.75, you know, when you get to kind of Manchester City being, you know, 2.5 goal favourites, that basically means if they win by three or more, your bet's a winner. And if they win by two or fewer, then your bet's a loser. There is, as there is for everything these days, I suppose, on Wikipedia, if you type in sort of Asian handicap, Wikipedia into Google, it does bring up a table that might be able to explain it, I suppose. You know, if I've just hit you with a barrage of numbers and you're like, well, what's going on here?
So now we know how Asian handicap betting works. I guess the next step is, when do we use it? So Jack asks, I understand how draw no bet, double chance and Asian handicap works, but I'm never sure which one to use. How do I go about deciding what's best?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think the answer basically is to stick to the same one throughout. And I mean, that would make this sort of podcast, I was going to say make it boring. It'd make it even more boring, you know, because if I just
speak
put up
for yourself.
Yeah. No, if I put up like 15 Asian handicap selections, I mean, that's not great content, is it? But I think from a betting point of view, I always prefer to kind of take out the what ifs and, you know, if only. And, you know, you often get people that maybe would take an underdog and bet them double chance and not to lose. And then when they win, you know, they're gutted because, oh, you know, well, I should have took the bigger odds and backed them to win. If you take that out of it and just bet like the same market, like all the time, then you never get that kind of, do you know what I mean? You never get that situation, never crops up because you're always betting the same way. And I think the Asian handicap out of all of them works best for that. And then that brings into, I suppose, bankroll management into it as well. And I think I've said this before, I think sort of best way to do that is to bet to win a certain amount. So, you know, if you want to, you know, if your aim is to win £10 and that's, you know, if the price is evens, then you have £10 at evens. You know, if it's 2-1, then you have a fiver. If it's 5-1, you have £2. Like that is the way that I think it kind of, you just take out so many of the kind of the questions that you might have if you bet like that, I think.
Okay, and one final question that we've had sent in that says, can you explain how match odds and Asian handicaps move and can it be different?
Yeah, I mean, so usually in Asian handicap, I mean, when we talk about sort of gambles in a game, it's usually the line that moves rather than the odds. So, you know, maybe it was like both teams off level at one stage and then a team would then maybe, you know, if they're backed, rather than sort of the odds changing too dramatically, it's the line that moves. So a team might then become 0.25 or quarter goal favourites, or maybe, you know, if it's a really big move, they might go to sort of half a goal favourites, which is 0.5. So it's usually the line rather than the kind of odds, if you like, that move. You know, in fixed odds terms, a team might be 4-5 and they're backed into 4-7. That's not quite how it works with the Asian lines. I think in terms of kind of can it be different? Most kind of 90-minute prices now, you know, are automated to the point where if the price moves in Asia, it will filter down into sort of, you know, onto Betfair and with the UK sort of bookmakers. And, you know, the kind of 90-minute price tracks the Asian handicap line, if that makes sense, Jack.
Got you. Yeah. No, spot on. Hopefully that answers people's questions, particularly around the basics of Asian handicaps. So if you ever hear Mark tip something up in the future, you'll know what he's talking about now. Hopefully that helps. Mark, also before next week's episode, there's the small matter of a Europa League final and we've got Rangers involved. It's Rangers against Frankfurt, 11-8 Frankfurt, 11-5 Rangers, 5-2 the draw. In terms of the lifting the trophy, Frankfurt favourites 4-6, 6-5 Rangers. A brilliant occasion this is sure to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think both teams are taking about 100,000 fans, aren't they, to Seville. And I saw the weather forecast for Wednesday, about 34, 35 degrees. So if there are any Rangers fans going, make sure to pack the factor 50. I think it's really interesting. 538, a website I've mentioned quite a few times this season, Nate Silver's sort of predictions website, they actually rate Rangers as favourites above Eintracht Frankfurt. And Frankfurt's numbers aren't that great. You know, they're bottom half in the Bundesliga. Their XG is not particularly good either. However, on the eye test, I think Frankfurt are actually quite a good side. And I was trying to tell my West Ham friends and I think I'm not even sure they got that much credit for beating West Ham. And a lot of the focus was on sort of West Ham's issues over those two legs. But I'm going to go for Frankfurt to lift the trophy. I look at them and in the Bundesliga this season, they've turned up for some big games. You know, they won away at Bayern Munich. They beat Leverkusen 5-2. They drew twice with Leipzig. They've won at Barcelona, Betis and West Ham in the Europa League knockout stages. And I think from Rangers' point of view, they've been very reliant on Ibrox, you know, to overturn ties against Braga and Leipzig. And, you know, they're very strong at home in the group stage too. And obviously there'll be a lot of Rangers fans there, but it's not quite the same, is it? You know, not being at Ibrox. I think sort of from that point of view, Eintracht Frankfurt are kind of more proven in terms of being able to get results outside of their comfort zone. The one exception to that for Rangers was the win over Borussia Dortmund. But I think it is worth remembering there were only 10,000 fans inside the stadium for that occasion. There were still COVID restrictions. And so maybe not quite the same as, you know, beating Dortmund at other times.
Okay, so message for Rangers fans, best of luck and pack the sun cream. Anything else?
No, I mean Seville's a, you know, beautiful city. I've been there a couple of times, and it is really nice. I'm sure they'll have a good time. I mean, I'm glad I'm not there though when there's like 200,000 football fans there.
Pint of water for every pint of beer. We don't want any sunstroke. There we go. Enjoy if you're going. And a big thank you to everyone who's listened in to this week's edition of Bet Club. Mark has put up a lot of selections. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. We'll be back next week for another edition of Mark Langdon's Bet Club.